Hi, welcome to Out of Focus. I'm Shannon Stewart. If you caught the last episode with my conversation with Lauren, you know we barely scratched the surface of her powerful story. And today in part two, we're going to dive even deeper, talking about resilience, identity, faith, healing. I cannot wait for you to hear the rest of our conversation. Well, you're going to have to tell us about this mission. I'm like on the edge of my seat. This God story is just unfolding. It's so amazing. So what happened next after she met them?
So Dave was the first one that went in country. And so his job after meeting my mom, his job was to go to Jordan and get the lay of the land. He was trying to get eyes on me because they weren't sure, was I still in Jordan? What if my dad had hidden me? Because we also had family in Lebanon. So he was trying to find my father's home and get eyes on me and find an escape route, because once they found me, they couldn't just fly me out of there. Dave spent like 2 weeks at least, maybe longer, in Jordan by himself, could not find me, could not find my father's home because all the photos my mom had given were very dated. He spent time going up through to Cyprus thinking that maybe that would be a good route to go. And after he traveled the roads, dirt roads, he said it was like winding dirt roads with dead camels. The way he says it when I interviewed him is like, you know, all the dead deer on the streets in Texas, that's how many dead camels there are. And I was like, okay, that gave me a good visual. And so he said when he went up through Cyprus, it looked like a battle zone, a war zone. So that was a no-go. Then he went up towards Aqaba. There's a body of water between Jordan and Israel. And he thought that he could, once they captured me, he could just put me on his back and swim me a mile from the border of Jordan to Israel. But once he got there, he realized that wasn't going to happen because that body of water on the Jordanian side had big barbed wire fences with military and machine gun towers. There's no way. So the best route would be the King Hussein Bridge. It's a border between Jordan and Israel, and there's a checkpoint, and you have to have border passes, visas, entry stamps to be able to go across that border. But that would be the safest route, and that's over the Jordan River. And so when I started diving into this story, the Jordan River and all the biblical history in that blew me away. So that was Dave's job. Well, after almost 3 weeks, he called Dawn and was like, I need y'all's help. I can't find Lauren, can't find the house. I figured out an escape route, but I'm going to need your help. So Dawn and JD, they came in to Jerosh. My mom was in Washington with Al trying to get me a passport because remember, my passport's already active. I'm in Jordan. So how do you get another passport for a child when there's already one being used, and visa stamps and entry stamps? So that was a whole thing that she was trying to do in Washington and pay lots of money to get people to give her the paperwork she needed. So she was doing that. JD and Dawn, they were dressed in disguise, changing out the rental cars every day so no one would recognize them because this is a small town. And they're in the streets, they're in the ruins, they're in the school areas, the marketplaces, trying to find me. And I got a chance to interview JD. JD is the one that spotted me in the streets of Jordan. And he actually passed away about 6 months ago. But that is the goodness of God. Before he passed away, my mom and I, Beverly and Rick, we all went to North Carolina. And we did an in-person reunion with everybody. If I would have waited, if I would have said, God, I can't do a podcast. God, I can't write a book. God, I can't speak on a stage. I would not have had the opportunity to meet JD and to be able to see him before he passed. So I will always be grateful for being able to see him and tell him thank you in person for saving my life and to honor him on my own podcast. But JD was standing in the streets of Jerosh and he said, Lauren, I did everything I knew how to do, but none of that was working. He said, I began praying. I stood in the streets and said, God, you got to help me find this little girl.
Was he a Christian?
Yeah, all of them. We didn't know that. mom would have hired anybody, right?
Right. To get you home. My parents would have done the same thing. Like, get her home.
I don't care who you believe in. But yes, all of them and their wives as well. All those wives were back praying, and we didn't know, praying over this rescue. So JD sees a school bus pull up. And he looks through the bus window, and I have dark complexion. I have darker hair, but my eyes are like a bright blue. So that was the distinguishing feature, were my eyes. And he said, "Lauren, you turned and looked straight at me. And when you locked eyes with me, I knew it was you." So he ran over to Dawn and he shook Dawn by the shoulders. And Dawn's like, "What is the deal? Why are you freaking out?" And he was like, "I saw Lauren. She's on the bus." But at that point, the bus had already driven off. They tried to chase it down, but the roads are so windy and narrow and filled with people that they couldn't keep up with the bus. But at least they knew I was in Jordan and I was going to school. So that way they knew to start tracking the school buses. So again, nothing happened in my story until people started praying. Then they had to call my mom and they said, "Kathy, we know Lauren is in Jordan. We've got eyes on her, but we can't find the house. We can't find Ollie's home. We need you to come and help us find the home." So she was in Cyprus at this point. She flew into Amman and they met her at the airport in Amman and then sort of covered her in disguise. She's sitting in the front seat of this rental car and Dawn's driving and JD's in the back and they're sort of giving her the lay of the land. And my mom thought she was going to be able to find it easily. She was very confident. But as they started driving into the town, she just freaked out. She was like, "Nothing looks the same. These dirt roads are now paved. These small buildings have been stacked one on top of the other because there's not a lot of land. So you sort of stack on top like big apartments." She's like, "Nothing looks the same." She got down in the floorboard of the front seat with her eyes closed, and she started praying out loud. She didn't care what she sounded like. "God, you've got to help us find her. You haven't brought me and these men this far to not even find the home." And she began telling Dawn where to go without ever opening her eyes. She said all of a sudden, it's like the Holy Spirit reminded her of how she had walked the streets all those years before she began remembering the different turns in the road and how the road went up and down the hills. And she started saying, "Go left and go straight, turn right." And she looked out her window and she saw a white Mazda with Texas license plates sitting on the street. And she froze. And finally, a couple blocks, she finally said, "I saw his car. Turn the car around." So Dawn said, "Kathy, hide your face. I'm going to turn back around." So when Dawn turned the car back around and went past that white Mazda, he saw my dad walk outside of the building. So that's how they found the home. Again, not until people started praying. So they had found me, they found the house. Now it was time to figure out the escape route. How were they going to get me? Because they realized the house was right next to a police station in the middle of a city. So if they went into the house to try to get me, that was really high risk. So they decided after watching the bus for a couple of days that the better option would be to hijack that school bus and get me off the bus. There was one stop on the outskirts of town at a little farmhouse, and it was safer because it wasn't in the middle of the city. So that was the plan, was to stop at that school bus. So the day of the mission, they were very cautious when they were talking on the phones, when they were talking back to the United States. Dawn's wife, Judy Feeney, she was in North Carolina running things just to make sure if something went wrong that they knew what was going on in the United States. And so she came up with the code word. And the code word for the day of the mission was, "The sun is shining." But she said, "Make sure Kathy knows that the sun is S-O-N, not S-U-N. And when my mom heard that, she'd never met Judy until recently, never knew Judy's faith. But that, yeah, the sun is Jesus. The sun is shining, that he is our protector. So even in the details of the code word, God was in it. So the day of the mission, there was two rental cars. Dave, the oldest one, the one that was in the city first before anyone else, he was in one car. His job was to make sure that I actually got on the bus. So they don't want to go hijack the bus and I'm not even on it. So once he realized that, yes, I was on the bus, he drove over to where Don and JD and my mom were in the other car. And he said, mission's a go. So as soon as that bus passed my mom and Don and JD, Don pulled the car behind that bus to block it in. Don went over to the driver's side and started speaking English to distract the bus driver. JD went over and pried open like those accordion style doors to the passenger door. And he got the keys out of the ignition and threw the keys into some bushes. So that way they would go looking for the keys, hopefully, and not go straight to the police. My mom, all dressed in disguise, she spotted me. She went over to a window, and this is really the main thing I remember. She went to the window and she tapped on my window. And with her big blue eyes, she's staring through that window and she is motioning at me to come to her. But Shannon, I froze. I remember looking at her and she just looked so beautiful. She had this glow around her. And all I could think of is, it looks like my mom, but it can't be her. She's in Texas. This can't be real. I must be dreaming. And so my mom had to get onto the bus. She pushed past JD and she pushed past all the kids and she picked me up and she's getting me off the bus. And a lady chaperone jumps on my mom's back because they have no idea what's going on. Jumps on my mom's back. My mom has to let me go. And she turns around and punches the woman in the nose. So now this woman's bleeding. So I'm totally freaking out. I'm like, maybe this isn't my mom. She's hitting people. So the men realize what's going on. They come over and they get me into the floorboard of that car. They cover me up to hide me. We all get in the car and we drive off. And then a couple blocks, we stop, pull over, and we trade cars with Dave, because Dave took our car that we just used to hijack the bus and he drove it back towards the city as a decoy. He had the most dangerous part of the whole thing. My mom had made fake reservations for us at the airport. She booked us flights out of Amman back to the United States, hoping that they would look for us at the airport. We continued to drive towards Israel. It was about a 45-minute drive from where we were to the border. Dave, and he talks about the details. My mom and I learned so much when I interviewed him. He got pulled over in the middle of town, surrounded by Jordanian police. They pulled him out of his car, interrogated him, tore apart his car looking for any evidence of me or my mom. All he had was a Pepsi can with Arabic writing on it and a Snickers bar. At our reunion, he still had that Pepsi can and he gave it to me. He said, I think you may want to keep this. I've kept it all these years.
Wow.
Yeah. Talk about, like, I mean, I was just bawling like a baby. And he just kept speaking English and staying calm and acting like a tourist, asking, you know, where's the best place to go fishing as they're interrogating him. Then they brought the bus driver over. And the bus driver is like, yes, that's the car, but I don't know who this man is, because Dave was not at the hijacking. In the middle of this going on, he said it was probably 30 minutes or longer. All of a sudden, he hears on the radios, Aliyah Airport, Aliyah Airport. They had found the reservations. So all those soldiers left Dave on the side of the road, got in their cars, and they went to the airport. They were shutting down the whole entire airport looking for us, and Dave was able to get away. That was total God miracle. So while that's all happening, which we have no clue, right? We're on our way to the border to Israel, the Allenby Bridge. Back then, I don't know what it's like now, but you have to leave your car on the Jordanian side. You get out, you hand over all your paperwork, your visas, the passports, all the things my mom worked so hard to get, and you hand it over and you get onto a bus. We sat on that bus for probably 30 minutes. And the border had big towers with machine guns, soldiers everywhere. There's tank traps, there's bomb triggers all around that border. There's big barbed wire fences, really high fences. And JD and Don had gone over that border numerous times before this rescue. They knew every inch of it. They wanted to make everyone aware of who they were. That way on the day of the mission, people would recognize them. But they were on guard, thinking, if they realize who we are, what are we going to do at that border? So finally, the bus driver gets on the bus. And the way it works is the Jordanian bus driver and there's a Jordanian soldier, and they take you to the midpoint of that bridge. And then there's a shack in the middle of that bridge. So then in the middle of the bridge, an Israeli bus driver and soldier, they switch over and they drive you on over into Israel. So as our bus is approaching the shack and the soldiers are switching position, there's a big commotion behind us where we had just left. They had just realized that we were not at that airport, but we were at the border on the bus. But at that point, it was too late. Our bus had already gone over. You could see the Israeli flag flying in the air. We were already home free. We got off that bus and my mom just grabs me and she is crying and kissing me and I am crying. And there was a group of women that were there and they came over to JD and they tapped him on the shoulder and they said, "What is going on with that mom and that little girl? Are they okay?" And JD turns and he's crying and he said, "Well, do you see that little girl and that mom? The little girl's been gone for 3 months. She was taken by her father to Jordan and we just rescued her and brought her home." And those women came around and started singing, "Praise you, Jesus. Hallelujah. We've come to the Holy Land and we've seen a miracle." So it's like even on the other side, God had people there to celebrate us and to welcome us after such a traumatic thing that we had gone through.
Wow. What was it like when you got home? What was going through your mind as a young girl? Did you realize that you were kidnapped at this point?
No. So we went to Israel. We were there for about 2 or 3 days and stayed in a hotel. And Iron Eagle 3, that's a whole nother story. But Iron Eagle 3 movie production was going on in Israel. And Don and Dave knew the producers because they had done some security for the movie. And Louis Gossett Jr., the actor, Don had done his private security detail. So Louis Gossett Jr. knew about our rescue after the fact and had a huge celebration for us there in Israel that night to celebrate us coming home. But me going back to Dallas, the Lamberts were there. Miranda was the first person I saw coming off that runway. I have a photo. I'm so glad someone took a photo of she was little. She was running against all the passengers as I'm coming down to hug me. And my aunt had kept all the Christmas decorations up. We celebrated Christmas when I got back. It took me a while to realize what had happened. I was only speaking Arabic for the first 3 or 4 days. I wasn't even speaking English. I talked to the men about this a little bit recently, and there's probably a better word to say other than brainwash, but that's the word they used. It's like kids at that age, you change so quickly and you just sort of get engulfed in whatever you're in. And I could hear it on those tapes when I was talking to my mom when I was in Jordan. I didn't even recognize myself, the accent that I had and the words I was speaking. It's scary how fast you can change. And so it was many years of healing and figuring out what had happened. It was many years because we had to change my last name. We lived in hiding. We moved about 14 or 15 times by the time I got to high school. My mom spent $80,000 to get me back, and she had to sell her last piece of jewelry to pay for rent because she had nothing left. So it was a lot that we went through, a lot of fear, a lot of anger. I talk about this in my book, the anger I had towards God. Like, how can you be a good God? That word father brought me so much hurt, those father wounds. And I had to wrestle with God just like my mom did. You know, God had to show me, you've got to trust me, Lauren, and you have to forgive your dad, even if he's never asked for forgiveness. Forgiveness doesn't mean what your dad did was okay. Forgiveness doesn't mean to forget, or I wouldn't be here sharing my testimony. Forgiveness is, I am letting go of this control. I don't want revenge. I am no longer angry. God, he is yours. And laying him at the feet of the cross. And that took a long time. That took a long time. That's why it says in the Bible, 70 times seven, over and over and over again. God, how many times do I have to forgive? But each time letting that go, I compare it to like an onion, peeling back those layers. And God had to wrestle with me and teach me the love of my heavenly Father. He's like, I'm nothing like your earthly father, Lauren. I am good and loving and gracious and kind. You got to trust me.
Do you have any examples of where he showed you that he was a loving and gracious God? Because I know some people can relate to you in many, many ways about being maybe abandoned or some trauma or being angry at God. I interviewed another lady who lost her husband and she was angry with him at first. Do you have any examples of where he showed you himself?
Well, looking back, I had a journal when I was younger and I had specific prayers. God, would you bring me a dad? Would you bring me siblings? It was all these voids that I had in my life. And he did. He brought me an amazing stepfather who just loved me, like full of joy and humor. He just wants to make you laugh. He's not going to discipline at all. And he had children. So I had a great stepsister and stepbrother. And so it's like God was giving me that beautiful family. So those are the ways that God was showing me, Lauren, I've got you, but you've got to trust me. And sometimes you can't explain it until you feel that freedom when you walk through it. And how do you do that in high school? How do you do that in college? It's just little by little and protecting you in relationships. Because, you know, if you can't forgive, you might carry that bitterness and anger into your next relationship, right?
Bitterness eats people up. They don't understand. It's not saying that what the person did is okay, but Jesus already paid the sin debt in full when he went on the cross for each one of us. And if we can't forgive others, he does say that he won't forgive us. So it's a high calling that we have to do as Christians to forgive because we've been forgiven of much.
Yeah.
And it's freeing for us. We're no longer putting ourselves in a prison. We're getting mad when the person's over there living their life. They don't care what they've done to us. But it's affecting us like poison. So it's definitely something that we have to do. And with God's spirit, he can empower us and help us to forgive others, even the inexcusable, like you went through with your father.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest lies of the enemy is that if you hold on, if you keep angry and bitter, you're hurting that person. And like you just said, no. They don't even know you're mad. Like my dad was clueless. When I reconnected with my dad, he had no clue. He's like, oh, I love you. He would call me baby after I hadn't talked to him in 20 years. I'm like, this is odd that this man I don't even know is calling me baby. So you're right. Like we're not hurting that person. You're just hurting yourself.
Have you talked to your dad that kidnapped you after you came home?
Yes, well, I did. And that is a story of forgiveness on my mom's part. My mom allowed me to see my dad after all we went through. And so I saw him when I was like 13 or 14 years old. I saw him in a very public place. We were on edge. I was scared out of my mind. We actually changed our license plate on our car because we still had Florida license plates. So that way, if he saw our car, he would think we lived there. But I just wanted to know who he was. I wanted to know what he looked like. I had all these thoughts, you know, for people that maybe don't know their biological parents, like you have all these questions of who are they? What does my past look like? And so my mom allowed me to explore all of that and to talk to him and to push and process through those things. It was hard. And then I went to visit him in my high school years and meet all my siblings. And then in my senior year of high school, I went to Lindale High School. I lived with the Lamberts in the house that built me, the song that Miranda sings. My dad came to my high school graduation and everybody knew who he was because it's a small town and they all knew my story. And then my mom invited everyone to come to our house after and cooked a meal for them. Like, so wow. She was showing me forgiveness. And because she allowed those things to happen, it allowed me the freedom to ask the questions and to process my own feelings.
Did he ever apologize?
He did, but it was more excuses of, I just wanted you to have a good life. I took you because I love you. The thing that I realized is I wanted a magical answer for my dad to give me that would take away all the pain, and he didn't have that answer. Only God could take away that pain. I was longing for the right words, and they never came.
I asked you that because some people don't forgive because they say, well, they haven't asked for forgiveness, but you are a great example. You can just tell that you've forgiven. You're a woman of grace and compassion and forgiveness. And so I knew that you had been given that grace from God to forgive him. So I was just curious if he had asked for it.
He did in his way, but yes, absolutely. And then, like you just said, God, you know, he will surprise you. My stepdad passed away in 2018. I'll never forget, Shannon. I walked into my mom's house. She had gone and picked up my kids for me because I work full time as a physical therapist. And it was a busy day. And I was like, Mom, can you get the kids? And I walked into her house to pick them up. And my mom said, your dad called. And it took me aback. I said, my dad? I was like, my dad just passed away. You know, like my mind, my dad is my stepfather. And she said, no, Ollie called. And it, my heart started fluttering because it had been years since I'd heard or thought about him. And he had tracked my mom down on the internet and just wanted to reach out because he was getting a little older and said, I would love to hear from Lauren. I want her to know I'm okay. I'd like to, you know, just have a relationship. And so I took the phone number and I put it in my pocket. And at this point, Shannon, I learned you pray and you pray and you pray some more before you speak, before you act. You pray. And I drove around with that number in my pocket for a couple of days. And finally, I was like, all right, God, I'm going to call. And I was in my car because that's the quietest place with kids is by myself in my car. So I dialed the number and I heard that voice and my heart started to race. And it was beautiful because God allowed me to let him go. I was able to tell him, I forgive you. My father that raised me, that walked me down the aisle, that was there when my children were born, he just passed away. That's that redemption story of my life. God put this amazing man in my life to do those things I longed for. And he just passed away. And he was an amazing father. But I forgive you because I believe in Jesus Christ. And because Jesus can forgive me of my sins, I have no anger towards you anymore. And I want you to know I am no longer mad at you, but I don't necessarily want a relationship. And so it's like God was allowing me to say goodbye to my stepfather and sort of closing a door with my biological father. Now, my biological father's still alive. So until God takes him, I don't know the end of that story, only he does. But to be able to forgive him and to tell him that, it was closure for me.
Oh, 100%. What hope would you give to someone listening who feels trapped or abandoned?
Your story is not over. God can, we talk about my pain, you know, my past to my future. I am not the pain of my past. God has redeemed my future because I've allowed him to. So if you are stuck in that place of abandonment, of brokenness, of hurt from a wound of your family, of your childhood, you could stay stuck there, or you could allow God to free you and redeem you and restore your story. But you have to put in the work. You have to walk through forgiveness. You've got to let go of the bitterness and the anger to allow God to do that work in your life. There's so many scriptures in the Bible that talk about it. Romans 8:26, in the same way the Spirit helps us in our weakness, we do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit intercedes for us. There are so many times where I'm like, I don't know how to pray. I don't want to pray. I don't want to pray over my dad. I'm mad. And so literally, God, I don't want to pray. He knows it. And so you can just speak the scripture. Romans 10:17, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God. If you have the size of a mustard seed, y'all, I have prayed that before. I'm like, God, I think I have the size of a mustard seed. I'm not sure. God will grow and grow and grow it. You don't have to be perfect.
You do not. He can redeem even our worst chapters. I'm a living testimony to that. I love the Bible because it's filled with imperfect people who he redeems, yes, and transforms and rewrites their stories. And he uses them in mighty, powerful ways to magnify his matchless, glorious name. He's so awesome.
He got like Rahab, like all you know, the prostitute, the like, yeah, the woman at the well, like all of the people. I'm like, I am the woman at the well, you know?
I would love for you to tell my listeners what you're up to now. You said you're writing a book. I did not tell them the name of your podcast. Tell them about your podcast. And you guys need to go check it out. She is an amazing host. She has awesome people on her show. As you can hear her story, she has an awesome testimony and heart. So please let everyone know how they can find you.
Thank you. It's a Redeemed podcast. It's on all the places that you might want to listen to. LaurenBurns.net is a great place to find me. I have a newsletter, and the newsletter is full of scriptures and tips and stories, redemption stories, and also the book writing process. That's been a whole thing, Shannon, that I've been learning about.
It is so exhausting. I'm writing a book too. Maybe ours will get done at the same time and we'll go on a book tour together.
Yes, that would be so much fun. Yeah. It is a lot. Like, I have a new respect for authors. I remember someone was like, well, it's going to be like a 2 to 5 year process. I was like, oh, you don't know me. I can get things done. No, it is a 2 to 5 year process. So my manuscript is out in the hands of publishers that just happened last week. So just praying, whatever God wants to do, it's in his hands. But yes, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Lauren Burns or Lauren Burns Redeemed is a great way to find me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I know your story is going to impact so many people. I think God is going to use you in so many ways. I can tell you're surrendered. You have your eyes focused on him. And I just pray his many blessings upon you and that he will be your door that no one can shut.
Thank you. Well, I love your podcast. I've been sharing it on my social media because the words and the stories and the people you're sharing. So keep doing it.
Thank you, girl. It's nice to have a Christian connection. I love how God puts people together. Thank you so much.
Me too.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, when life feels out of focus, there is always one who brings clarity. We'll see you next time.